to read several portions concerning the abomination of desolation. All right. Specifically, Daniel chapter 9 is where we're going to start. Now, Daniel was given a vision of 77s that would occur for the people of God, a prophecy. And in the final seven, now these were weeks of 7 years. Each seven stood for a week of years. So the final seven, or a 7 year period. Now, let me explain, and not to get too deep into doctrine, because we're really talking about meaning so much tonight, not so much just doctrine. But remember that the 7 years is a 7 year covenant. It says in verse 27, this prince who shall come, verse 27, he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 7. And this is that final seven of Daniel 77s. In the middle of the seven, he'll put an end to sacrifice and offering. Alright, so this isn't a 7 year tribulation period. Now, this is interesting because in the scriptures, we have all through the scriptures, you'll find that this is the only 7 year period that's mentioned in relationship to the end. And this is where people get the idea there's a 7 year tribulation at the end. There isn't. There's a 7 year covenant this man makes with many. And in the midst of this covenant, he causes what is known as the abomination of desolation. Let me read it to you again. It tells us he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 7, and in the middle of the seven, which means 3.5 years into it, that's half of seven, he'll put an end to sacrifice and offering. And on a wing of the temple, he'll set up an abomination that causes desolation until the end that is decreed is poured out on him. All right, what is the abomination of desolation, and why is it described that way? Before we answer the question, we're going to read some other scripture. But notice, and it's an important, in the middle of the seven, in the middle of the seven, he causes the abomination of desolation. Now, when you get to Matthew 24, verse 15, Jesus himself says, when you see the abomination of desolation, as spoken by the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. And then let those in Judea flee, and so forth. And it gets to verse 21, for then shall begin the greatest tribulation the world will ever see. So the great tribulation starts at the abomination of desolation. The Antichrist, Revelation 13:5, is given power to rule and reign for 3.5 years, 40 and 2 months, which is the second half of the 7 year covenant. So the great tribulation is 3.5 years long. It coincides exactly with how long the Antichrist is given to rule and reign. It happens in the middle of the 7 year period. So there is no 7 year tribulation period. It's a 3.5 year period. And that's an important point. But we start, what reveals Antichrist for who he is, according to Daniel and Jesus, is the abomination of desolation. So we need to talk about that. What is this son of perdition, this man of sin? What's the point behind him? What's the point of having an Antichrist? What is being done through it? Alright. For some of these answers, we need to go back to Daniel chapter 8. Now, it tells us this vision in Daniel chapter 8, and I have to give you a little background, so you'll understand the roots of the Antichrist. Daniel chapter 8 concerns Greece. It tells us about a goat that moves without touching the ground that charges a two-horned ram. These are pictures of beasts that were already pictured in Daniel chapter 7. They were pictured as the bear and the leopard. The bear is Medo-Persia, and after that was overthrown by Greece, Macedonia, Alexander the Great. Now notice the similarity between a goat moving across the ground without touching it and a leopard. It's because Alexander moved very quickly in what he did. He took over the world quicker than anybody ever had. The two-horned ram symbolizes those two kings that are over Medo-Persia. All right. So he attacked the ram and shattered its power, broke off its horns. That means those kings were overthrown. And you don't have to take my word for any of this interpretation, because it's all right there in Daniel 8. Even though it was years before Medo-Persia had fallen when this was written, it was before Babylon had been destroyed and Medo-Persia had took over, and before, long before Alexander the Great even existed. So he tells us about this goat that moves without touching the ground. And he attacks this ram, Medo-Persia, and Greece, or Macedonia, this goat, has one notable horn, and it's broken off after he destroys Medo-Persia. And the notable horn that's broken off, it says four other horns come up in its place. Well, that's what happened with Alexander the Great. His four generals took over Greece, Macedonia, that kingdom that they overthrew. And these four generals were Nicomedes, Antipater, Seleucid, and Ptolemy. Well, Seleucid and Ptolemy became very strong, and they became the two strongest of all those four nations that came out of Alexander the Great's kingdom that was parceled out to these four different rulers. And they became known as the King of the South and the King of the North in Daniel. King of the South was Egypt, King of the North was the Seleucids or Syria. And those are the kingdoms that they took over. Well, it tells us that after I heard a holy one speaking, verse 13 of chapter 8, and another holy one said to him, how long will it take for the vision to be fulfilled? The vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the rebellion that causes desolation. That's what we want to deal with. The rebellion that causes desolation and the surrender of the sanctuary and of the host that will be trampled underfoot. Now, this is the vision. We're going to get to the interpretation of it from Daniel in a minute. But let me read you the whole vision. The goat became very great, verse 8, at the height of his power, and his large horn was broken off, and in its place four prominent horns grew upward toward the four winds of heaven. Those are those four generals. Out of one of them came another horn. Now, one of those horns is Syria, Seleucids. So it's out of Syria, the king of the north, that we're going to see later described as Antichrist. Keep this in mind. So out of one of them, another horn which started small, and this is the little horn Daniel's talking about, but grew in power to the south and to the east and toward the beautiful land, which is Israel. And it grew until it reached the host of the heavens, and so threw some of the starry host down to the earth and trampled on them. It set itself up to be as great as the prince of the host. As the prince of the host. The prince of the host is Jesus. It took away the daily sacrifice from him, and took the place of his sanctuary, which was in the temple, and the place of his sanctuary was brought low. Because of rebellion, the host of the saints and the daily sacrifice were given over to it. It prospered in everything it did, and truth was thrown to the ground. And I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to him, how long will it be for the vision to be fulfilled? The vision concerning the daily sacrifice, the rebellion that causes desolation, the surrender of the sanctuary, and of the host that will be trampled underfoot. And he said it'll take 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary will be reconsecrated. So now we get to the interpretation of this vision. All right? It says the two-horned ram in verse 20 you saw represents the kings of Media and Persia, Medo-Persia. The shaggy goat is the king of Greece, and the large horns between his eyes is its first king. The four horns that replace the one that was broken off represent four kingdoms that will emerge from his nation, but will not have the same power. And that did happen. Verse 23, in the latter part of their reign, now who's the there? Is speaking of these four kingdoms and the latter part of their reign, not just the men, but the kingdoms. When rebels have become completely wicked, and this is speaking of those nations, the nations, and the latter part of their reign, when rebels have become completely wicked, a stern-faced king, a master of intrigue, will arise. He'll become very strong, but not by his own power. Now, the latter part of their reign is a reference to the last days. And this is speaking of Antichrist, the stern-faced king. But it's in a time when rebels become completely wicked. Now, what is this referring to? It's real easy to see it. We can go over, because this is where Paul himself gets the imagery that he tells us about concerning the Antichrist. And I want to take a break here for a moment and read you 2 Thessalonians 2 so that we can see it clearly. Concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, this is verse 1, chapter 2, and our being gathered to him. Now this refers to his second coming and us being gathered to him. It knows that shows it as one event. We ask you, brothers, not to become easily unsettled or alarmed by some prophecy, report, or letter supposed to have come from us saying that the day of the Lord has already come. Don't let anyone deceive you in any way, for that day will not come until the rebellion occurs and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the man doomed to destruction. He will oppose and will exalt himself over everything that is called God or is worshipped, so that he sets himself up in God's temple, proclaiming himself to be God. This is that abomination of desolation. But notice, it's when, until the rebellion occurs and the man of lawlessness is revealed, this man doomed to destruction, who exalts himself above all that is called God in God's temple. All right? Going back again to chapter 8, in the latter part of their reign, the last days, in other words, when rebels have become completely wicked, the great rebellion occurs. What is that? It's also called the great falling away. Now, we've got to deal with this. What does it mean for rebels to become completely wicked? What does it mean for rebels to become completely wicked? Weren't they, you know, if they're rebels, weren't they already completely wicked? No. See, the very nature of the saying here tells you something's going on. When rebels become completely wicked, they go all the way. All the way. What does this mean? And it's obviously the same thing, because a stern-faced king is the Antichrist. When rebels become completely wicked, a stern-faced king will arise. Compares exactly with what Paul is saying concerning the temple and its him setting himself up in God's temple, proclaiming himself to be God. When rebels become completely wicked, when the rebellion occurs. So what is it? It tells us this about many falling away in Matthew 24. These are the rebels that become completely wicked. It tells us the coming of the lawless one, verse 9, will be in accordance with the work of Satan, displayed in all kinds of counterfeit miracles, signs, and wonders, and in every sort of evil that deceives those who are perishing. Rebels are those who are perishing. They perish because they refuse to love the truth and be saved. For this reason, God sends them a powerful delusion so that they will believe the lie, so that all will be condemned who have not believed in the truth but have delighted in wickedness. Now, God gives them a delusion to take them all the way to the other side of grace. You see it? They're given over to what they've chosen. Amen. Given over to what they've chosen. They chose to be wicked, and through grace, they weren't given all the way over to it. But when the Antichrist comes, is when grace runs out for them. God gives them over to what they've chosen, that strong delusion. And that's what it means by rebels, when they become completely wicked, a stern-faced king will arise. These are the great. This is the great falling away. And that's when it occurs, is when Antichrist is revealed. Notice they're coupled here, and they're coupled in Daniel 8. Now, why? Well, we've got to see what it means both physically and spiritually. Now, I want you to think of what the Antichrist represents. He's definitely physically coming and going to be physically manifested. That's true in a man. But let's look at what he means for a minute as well. See, a man will take his seat in a temple that's called God's temple, a physical temple, and he will be accepted by those who say they're looking for a Messiah, the physical people of God, the Jews, right? And then he's revealed for what he is. They're given over to a strong delusion to believe the lie that he is their Messiah. And he takes a seat in the temple and proclaims himself to be God, the temple they were building for a Messiah. Well, notice spiritually what's going on in the hearts of people who claim they believe. Notice what the followers of Antichrist will be. These are people, see, you've heard it said that we are a temple, right? Their bodies are temples. And Satan comes to sit on the throne of their heart, which is a throne that belongs to God. And they're given over to believe the lie. Satan takes his seat in their throne room, where God is supposed to sit. See? He is the true Antichrist. So he sits in their hearts, proclaiming himself to be God, and he stops their daily sacrifice. They no longer seek after God or pray. It's an abomination of desolation. Their hearts become desolate of the Spirit of God. There is no Shekinah glory in that temple, just as there is no Spirit of Christ in that temple. It's the devil sitting on that throne, proclaiming himself to be their God. You see it? When rebels become completely wicked. The great falling away is just the spiritual counterpart of the Antichrist taking a seat in that physical temple. It's the spiritual counterpart of the physical. One is physical, the Antichrist taking a seat in that temple, and the other is spiritual, what's going on in the hearts and the minds of his followers. So it's physically and spiritually, they're both the abomination of desolation. And that's why they happen at the same time, when rebels become completely wicked. Now, how many of you can see that? This is what we're talking about. So, going back to chapter 8, in the latter part of their reign, when rebels have become completely wicked, a stern-faced king, a master of intrigue, will arise. Isn't that what the devil is too? So we see the spiritual and physical truth of the Antichrist, don't we? He will become very strong, but not by his own power. Where does that come from? Verse 24. He will become very strong, but not by his own power. Revelation 13. Read 4 and 5. The devil gives him his seat, his power, and his great authority. The devil gives the Antichrist. See, he's the influence in the spiritual realm that's working on the physical realm to bring forth Antichrist. It is a manifestation of what the devil wants to do through a man. You see it? He gives him his power, his seat, and his great authority. Now, Satan has always been called the god of this world. He is the prince and power of the air. He is, him and his demons have that lordship, so to speak, from the air over the affairs of men. Right? In the heavenlies. And he is influenced. He has influenced the kingdoms of men. Now this is his direct intervention to try and take over the world, literally. It is to manifest himself from that spiritual realm into this fleshly realm through a man and his rule. You see it? That's what the Antichrist is about. So it is the dragon, the devil, that gave him a seat and his power and his great authority. He'll become very strong, but not by his own power. He will cause astounding devastation and will seed in whatever he does. That's what the devil does, isn't it? Cause astounding devastation. He'll destroy the mighty men and the holy people. It tells us in Revelation 13, he'll make war with the saints and overcome them. He'll cause deceit to prosper, and he'll consider himself superior. He sets himself up in God's temple, showing himself to be God. When they feel secure, he'll destroy many and take a stand against the princes of princes. He will take a stand against Christ. But we know what happens when Jesus comes. Now listen, yet he'll be destroyed, but not by human power. Revelation 19. As a matter of fact, let's just go back to 2 Thessalonians 2. What destroys him? The lawless one, verse 8, will be revealed, whom the Lord Jesus will overthrow with the breath of his mouth and destroy by the splendor of his coming. Get it? He'll be destroyed, but not by any human power. You see it? Jesus' return is what destroys him. So, we've got this picture now. We've got this picture of both the physical and the spiritual working together. The spiritual things being manifested to the physical. The devil taking his seat in the hearts of his followers and them being given over to his deception, because that's what they chose, because they didn't love the truth. And him setting himself up in their hearts, proclaiming himself to be their God, and stopping their daily sacrifice, causing that abomination of desolation, because he's in a place that only God belongs. While at the same time, we have a physical man taking his seat in a physical temple, in a place that only God is supposed to be, causing another abomination of desolation, which is figurative of the bigger one in God's people, or in the people who should belong to God. You see that? One is a picture of the other, but they're both the same thing, physically and spiritually. Now that we understand that, we're starting to understand the nature of the true abomination of desolation. It's about the heart of man. It's about the heart of man. The true abomination of desolation. The true adversary. The true children of the devil. And this is what believers are dealing with. This war that has been played out in heaven will be played out upon the earth. It has. You know why? Jesus overcame. Right now he's at the right hand of the Father. And all those powers and principalities in the heavenlies are under his feet. All those powers and principalities in the heavenlies are under his feet. He's at the right hand of the Father. He is overcome through his death and resurrection. His blood has cleansed the heavenlies. But it will be demonstrated here on earth when he rules and reigns over flesh for 1,000 years. When he comes down and overthrows the Antichrist with the brightness of his coming. Now, I want you to notice something about Jesus and the Antichrist and the devil. See, the devil is not the Antichrist. He is not that man. And that man is not the devil. But they're in union with each other, aren't they? Satan can only manifest himself through that flesh. He ain't that flesh. But notice something about Jesus. As we see the physical and spiritual counterpart of what the devil's doing as expressed through the Antichrist, we see Jesus, who is both God and man. Don't we? We see him ruling at the Father's right hand now, and we will see him as the man who overthrows that other man when he returns. A resurrected man who overthrows that other man with the brightness of his coming. You see it? And that's why he must come back literally. Because he will literally rule over the nations for 1,000 years with a rod of iron, to show that 1,000 years is indicative, that 1,000 years is indicative of Jesus' eternal rule. It's a picture. It's to show that everything has been subjected to Christ. And as it has happened in the heavens, it must be manifested to the earth in the seen. Because everything in the unseen is manifested to the seen. And as it was with the devil, it will be with Christ. The rule he has now at the right hand of the Father that cannot be seen must be manifested to where it is seen. You see it? What has been done in the heavenlies? Jesus is ruling and reigning, and all powers and principalities under his feet, and his overcoming of death must be demonstrated in the seen through the resurrection of the dead. That's why Jesus comes and receives us all then. That's when it's manifested. The very event of our resurrections, our bodies being redeemed, is the picture of our spirits that have already been redeemed through Christ. I mean, look at it. You're the same way. You're in the same position. Right now, your spirit is alive through Christ, but the body is considered dead because it hasn't been resurrected. You still have this corrupt body. As first your spirit is redeemed, that you can enter into communion and sit in heavenly places with Christ, commune with the Holy Father through the righteousness of Christ. But your body has still got to be resurrected. In other words, that spiritual salvation that you have now through faith must be demonstrated in the seen through the resurrection. Can you see it? That's the pattern of all these things. Whatever is done in the spiritual must be demonstrated in the physical. And it will be. Your salvation, Satan's destruction, and Jesus' overcoming. All three of those things. Even those who rebel, both physically and spiritually, it must be demonstrated. The things of the Spirit are manifested to the things that are seen. Can y'all see this? That's why, you know, you live in both realms, spiritually and physically, body and spirit. And as your spirit has been redeemed through faith, your body will be redeemed through the resurrection. This right here is a key to see it in this way, to understand that abomination of desolation is about the heart of man. It's to open up so you can start looking at the scriptures a little differently and prayerfully. And this is a key. This is a beginning point that should take you on to understand the very true nature of what a Christian is and how all these events are going to transpire. It is the pattern. And the pattern ain't going to change. It ain't going to change. Everything in heaven and earth will follow this pattern because it is the pattern of God. That's a good place to stop. Any questions or comments, please feel free. Do you really see this?